You're listening to The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, bringing class to trash since 1977.
All right, everybody, welcome to the GGTMC. We are live. We are ready to go. We have been vaccinated. No. I've been half vaccinated, so.
No.
No. All right, so we are ready to we are ready to go. We are the vaccine for your movie ills, though. That's right. We are. We are the Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema.
Oh, that's a reach and a half, isn't it?
That is a reach, but I'll go with
a reach around, maybe. Yeah, but
it sounded good.
It did. No, I was okay with that one.
At least I felt like it sounded good anyway. It flowed when I said it. Yeah. There we
Kudos
go.
To you, sir.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. We'll put that in. That'll be a good tagline for us for the future, maybe. Maybe I'll get. I'll call up Alyssa and have her record that. Welcome back. This week on The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, we're going to do a little thing with a little genre of films, and I do consider the one of these films in this genre. I don't know if it's ever really talked about as much, because usually it's talked about in more of a parody form, but I consider it part of the genre. But Bruceploitation is a not a little known genre, but it's a small kind of. Well, you know what? It's not as small a genre as you think. It's there's quite a bit. So we're going to get into some Bruceploitation this week with The Clones of Bruce Lee from 1980, directed by Joseph, was it Velasco? Was it Velasco?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also known as Joseph Kong. And then They Call Me Bruce. They Call Me Bruce from 1982, directed by Elliot Hong. So we got Hong and Kong, how about that, in the director titles. It's pretty goofy.
Prophetic.
I don't know if prophetic's the word, but it's certainly something. So this will be kind of fun to talk about, because this is a genre of films. I mean, in my opinion, you really got to be a movie lover to go down the path of Bruceploitation films, because there's some true garbage in there, but there's some gems every now and then. Some stuff that you'll say WTF to, and I think these two are good examples of the WTF Bruceploitation genre.
Well, I think that's the joy of them to begin with. So
yeah. So we'll talk about that kind of stuff this week and the fun of that. Oddly, again, The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, we've never covered a Bruce Lee film. But we have covered Bruceploitation films. It's what we do. It's how we do things around here. It comes from the idea, though. I mean, of course, obviously, this was you picked the clones, and I was like, well, I've been wanting to talk about They Call Me Bruce for a while, and it's interesting how we come across films. It really is as haphazard as it gets. There's never really a game plan. There hasn't been one for years. But I kind of enjoy that because if it's too planned, it feels like work to me. So
I don't think that anybody would have guessed that until you let the cat out of the bag there.
Yeah, maybe not.
I mean, really?
Yeah, we are haphazard.
Way to go. Yeah. Way to show them how the sausage is made.
Yeah, well, I do that, yes.
How
well,
the scrapple's made.
You got to have something for the intro, Todd. So giving them some BTS, a little behind the scenes. Not Brian Trenchard Smith. A little behind the scenes action.
I was going to say.
I would recommend you
Brian
stick.
Brian Trenchard Smith, who has the book Adventures in the B Movie Trade.
That's right. Which is
for $20 on Amazon.
Which is a huge book. If you.
I got one.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is hefty.
Not only is it a big physical copy, but it's got a lot of stuff in there.
And he goes.
He is quite the storyteller.
Raconteur.
Yeah, he is a raconteur. I would say that's the exact word he is. All right, man, let's get into it. What have you been watching?
Well, this is going to be a short intro because I watched exactly one movie.
I watched one movie too. So hey,
there you go. So I hope everybody would like to get back to bed today.
I know I would.
Because, yeah, I definitely would. I'm not gonna, but I say that I would. I lie. So yeah, it was pretty much just another crimmy that I got done. And this one was Puzzle of the Red Orchid, 1962, directed by Helmut Ashley, or Ashley.
Helmut?
Anyway, Helmut, not Zemo. So, yeah, this one was a fairly straightforward gangster story from the subgenre there. It has Christopher Lee in the lead role. And it was really odd because I found it really, 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 really disconcerting to hear him dubbed in English by somebody other than Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
But this one was, at the end of the day, it's pretty fun, but it's also pretty standard. Is about the best thing you could say about it, in my opinion. But yeah, just kind of trooping along with the whole Rialto Films subgenre there, or subgenre,
yeah,
or however you want to refer to it.
Yeah. I mean, again, you got to be a film lover to get down that road, right?
You kind of do. You kind of do to have to want to continue with it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's on, dude. That's it. I mean, all I got. Rare Godzilla free week in Tokyo, as it were, for movies for me.
I had a very light week as well. I did check out the John Wayne Gacy documentary on Peacock. I am a subscriber to Peacock, but that's because that's where the WWE network went. And my son.
I thought it because it had the word cock in it, but okay.
Yeah, that has something to do with it as well. But the it easily came up in my search engine. The
it pre-filled right in there for you.
Except for whatever reason, I searched cock pee. And that's what. No. But I watched that. That was six parts. So that took a lot of my movie watching away because those are an hour long a piece episodes. And the first four episodes are really good. The second two episodes, I don't know, they go down a really weird path of things I didn't know. So anyway, I'll leave that out there for anybody that watches that kind of thing. And obviously just to put a little filler in here at the intro. But I did watch one thing that finally checked off my, I guess you could say, list of shame, or something that I've been trying to get to for a long time. We fired up Thor Ragnarok finally.
Ah.
And we did watch that. And I have to say, this is easily my favorite Marvel Universe movie.
Isn't it a fucking blast?
It's the best. It's clearly the best movie they've generated out of this whole thing for me.
Yeah, it's easily top of the fucking heap, if not number one.
Dare I say, almost perfect in a lot of ways. I mean, it's really that good. I mean, I was not bored. My son and I were talking about it. Well, we've talked about it just about every day. We've had a blast, kind of quoting it and having fun with it. And obviously the movie's having fun with itself and it's having fun with the genre.
Yeah.
And obviously it has the Taika Waititi sense of humor to it, which is New Zealandish and interesting and quirky would be a good word. Because I think the movie is quirky.
Oh my God, yeah.
And that
especially once Goldblum shows up.
Yeah, I mean, well, it it's quirky, and then he shows up, and it becomes dare I say quirkier. But he is wonderful in the film, delivering lines in only the way that Jeff Goldblum can. Mm-hmm. My son knows him as nothing else but a caricature of himself. So as soon as he saw him, he was like, "Oh, it's that guy that talks weird."
It's the apartments.com guy.
Yeah, it's the guy that always wears the black suit with the black turtleneck, with the black glasses and the black shoes. And I was getting ready to do my Jeff Goldblum, but I'm too tired. I can't do it. but he's pretty great. He has a great quote line in there. Why are you trying to give me the melt stick? And Hemsworth's having fun, obviously. Tessa Thompson's having fun.
Yeah.
Everybody's having fun. Tom Hiddleston's fun. Although I do think as much fun as the Loki character is, it's very odd, the almost Stan Laurel sensibility that they give him in this film. I still love it. But, you know, Loki's a strange creation in the Marvel Universe, and that he started out as this all-powerful thing. And he's kind of turned into this kind of shit-eating grin buffoon.
Well, it's kind of like, I mean, and this is one of the things I've always noticed about comic books, is that you'll have a new villain or what have you show up, and, you know, for six issues or something, he'll rip the shit out of the heroes until they finally beat him by, like, the skin of their teeth. And then he'll show up, like, a year or two later, and they'll pounce him in, like, one issue. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
So what changed between then and here?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I expect that'll probably happen with Loki in some ways.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I had a really good time with it. We had a really good time with it. I mean, it's a wonderful film. And I mean, I'm saying that in the sensibility of not just saying that we had fun, but I just think it's very well made and very well paced. And even though it is, obviously it's relying on special effects, it never feels that way.
Right. And
that's very important.
Yes.
I just think Waititi can do that, and he does it very well. And he's just a unique filmmaker. And again, this gets into that conversation we've had in the past. For me, you know, these films work better when there's some personality with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously Waititi plays Korg in this, and you know, Korg's personality is his kind of frank, kind of optimistic sense of humor, or, well, I don't know if it's a sense of humor. It's just the way he talks.
Yeah.
Hello, my name's Coke. Yeah. I tried to make
another
some
day, another
yeah.
Doug.
Yeah. Tried to make some pamphlets. And anyway, he's just great. Are those eggs? I think those are eggs, mate. he's wonderful. And it made me go to iTunes and purchase some Waititi films I didn't have. They were only $5 a piece. Like, you know.
Oh, he's a really good filmmaker. Yeah. I like him a lot.
Yeah, What We Do in the Shadows and Hunt for World of Paper, I bought for five bucks a piece. And
nice.
He's, he's great. And it's fun to watch him bring, like a lot of great filmmakers, and he seems like generally just a nice guy. He brings people that he works with into the films he works on, even if they're big films, right?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of surprised that Jermaine Clement didn't show up in this thing.
Yeah, it seems like him and Jermaine Clement haven't done anything in a while together. I don't
Unfortunately, know. Because, man, they work well together.
They do. I guess What We Do in the Shadows was the last thing, maybe? Maybe Eagle versus
Shadow? I believe What We Do in the Shadows would have been the last thing that they... Yeah. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
I don't know what Jermaine Clement's up to nowadays, but I'm sure he's up to something.
Oh, yeah. Probably like 6'2".
Yeah.
Oh.
But anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I agree, and I think that, you know, I tend to hold out the faintest glimmer of hope that studios like Disney will take their cues from the success of stuff like this to go down the what I call the Archie Goodwin road of hiring people who you know are talented. And just kind of letting them do their thing and not really, you know, getting involved unless you absolutely have to in order to kind of keep them on a certain path. But other than that, just kind of letting them, cutting them free, cutting them as much slack as they need to have. And then you get, and then you will get a better product.
Yeah. It seems like that's what they're trying to do. Cause I mean,
it does seem that way. And I hold out the hope that they will do that more and more often. I kind of know in the back of my head that they won't. You know, when push comes to shove, but, you know, I really want to believe that they will.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. So yeah, that's about all I watched. I mean, we stay caught up on Winter Soldier and whatnot, which is
it's
pretty good. This is a Marvel series that I actually hate. That's only going to be six episodes. I wish it was eight. you won't hear me say that very often, but I quite enjoyed it. Although I found most of this past episode a bit of a chore to get through. By the time it gets to the point of the plot turn and the whole U.S. agent thing and all that stuff that I loved as a kid growing up reading comics, I like that stuff a lot. So I won't get into details, obviously, for those who haven't seen it, but some pretty great imagery there at the back end of that episode, I got to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep, good stuff. And Wyatt Russell, man, I know he's got a kind of a strange underbite jawline, but that's his name, right? Wyatt Russell? Is that his name?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yep.
You can definitely see a bit of his dad in his, he's got a little bit, I mean, obviously.
Dude, I see none of either of his parents.
Yeah, I see a little, well, not in his face. There's some type of line delivery or something when he's trying to like turn on the charm a little bit that's a little Russell-like. Obviously,
I could see that.
I don't know if he has the, a little bit. But then again, not very many people have the charisma of Kurt Russell. I mean, it's
new.
Jesus, even genetically, that would be hard to pass on. So he's kind of a unique, kind of an anomaly in movie history anyway, in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Just one of those naturally charming individuals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, light week. That's not bad. That's not a bad intro. I mean, still, we got 18 minutes out of it. Hey. Huh.
Yeah, not bad. Like I always say, what do you want for nothing? Yeah, rubber biscuit.
We got a tagline out of it, you know? anyway, all right, we'll take a short break and we'll come back and talk Clones of Bruce Lee from 1980. We'll be back right after this. I bet of most things you thought I'd pick, I bet you didn't think I'd pick that.
The fucking tic-tac-toe fucking theme?
Yeah. Why not, man?
I love it.
Take you back a little bit.
To be perfectly blunt, I fucking love it, so hey.
Take you back in time a little bit there.
Hell yeah. Dude, watch out for the dragon. Come on. Yeah. Get Wink fucking out there.
Yeah. He is a clone of Bruce Lee.
He's the closest thing we're going to get in America. So.
Yes. Wink Lee. sounds like the a nickname for a body appendage.
Uh-huh.
All right. The Clones of Bruce Lee, 1980, also known as Shen Wei San Meng Long.
Oh, say that three times fast.
basic plot synopsis, Bruce Lee has just died, but the BSI is swinging into action to salvage the situation.
I think you should just leave it there.
Yeah, and I will, because it really otherwise is not. It just goes down a rabbit hole that you're like, what are we talking about here? So this is as Bruce Plantation as they get. You get Dragon Lee, Arena Shevchenko. I don't know what he. I don't know him as well. And then Bruce Lee, or Bruce Lee, or Lay, L-A. You know what? Dragon Lee was also billed sometimes Bruce L-E-I.
Yeah.
And then you got Bruce L-E. So this gets into a really weird world. And then you got Yitai Chang in here, or Chang Yitao, or however you want to say his name, who plays Bruce Lee 3. But I think in the movie he's billed as Bruce Lee, L-A-I, not L-E-I. And then you get Bruce Tai in the movie, who's playing Chuck Lee. But then to get back to normal, you got Bolo Young in here playing the martial arts trainer.
Got to throw him in there.
But he's cast as Yang Xi. So, I mean, we it's super confusing. I am not an expert on Asian cinema.
Well, that's kind of what they banked on, I think.
Yes. Well, yeah, it is. But I mean, if you're a layman and you come to this and you see this on TV, there's a lot of moments where you'll say, "Oh man, this is a Bruce Lee movie." Clearly, the noises, the sounds, the gestures are all there, which is a pretty common thing with the Bruceploitation genre. Dragon Lee is one of the better, I think, impersonators of Bruce Lee. Personally, I think he gets the kind of jutting out of the chin, the kind of underbite look, the grimace. I think he gets that pretty good. And some of his physical attributes are similar. The other guys in here are pretty good too, but they look better with sunglasses on than without. When they take the sunglasses off, they kind of look like a Rat Pack version of a Bruce Lee or something. I don't know, I'm talking about being Shevchenko and Bruce Lee.
Like the whatever. Joey Bishops of Bruce Lee. Yeah.
So we'll jump into this here. I'll take the lead on this one. And again, I'm not I'm only as versed in Bruceploitation as a movie fan. I will not completely sit here and say that I am an expert. But it is a fascinating world if you want to go down that road. So when I was a kid, you're the same age as me, but I was fascinated by two or three deaths when I was a kid. That sounds kind of dark, but I think kids, you know, when you start to realize that life is, there's mortality, you start to get kind of fascinated with it a little bit, maybe the dark side of it, you know. And Bruce Lee was one because he died unexpectedly. Yep. Elvis Presley was another.
Yep.
Of course, to my young self, he died unexpectedly. As I got older, I realized, you know, he was...
No, everybody expected that.
Yeah, he was on the path. And then, of course, John Lennon was one because it really affected my parents. It didn't really affect me as much because I was only 7 or 8 years old at the time. But obviously, my parents were completely affected. And I remember just thinking, wow, that, you know, musicians and film people and stuff like that, they can affect you that way. Mm-hmm. But Bruce Lee was definitely one of them. And there's some similarities between Bruce Lee and Elvis Presley in the fact that they both love the shades.
Yes.
The same kind of shades, I would argue. And I would imagine that the King loved him some Bruce Lee films. He seemed like he would have been a bit of a kung fu buff. We know he did a little kung fu, so it seems to me like he probably owned some Bruce Lee films. Probably reel to reel. Probably ran them in the old Graceland there.
Yeah. He's a Scotty, DJ. Bring me that damn Chinese Connection, man.
Yeah. Fist Fury, baby.
Well, so with the peanut butter and nanner sandwich.
Oh, that sounds pretty good right now.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, so this one opens up with a bang. Bruce Lee has died. They're running a gentleman across on a gurney. They're really kind of going for the legend of the death of Bruce Lee.
Yeah, well, and it's kind of it's a pretty tacky.
Oh, it's very tacky.
In that they do use actual funeral footage.
Yeah, it's tacky.
At least the cut that I have, they didn't show it, like actual corpse footage.
No.
But there is actual footage of from when he died. Yeah.
Yes, and the director, they kind of Rambo you through this kind of intro, and then they throw you into this weird science movie, and not the weird science we all love. This is the... Nope.
Kelly LeBrock does not show up.
Yeah, this is one of those films. The last time we had this kind of weird science was Patrick Still Lives, and...
Yeah, indeed.
This is certainly that kind of science. No doubt. I mean, it's as wonky and wacky as it gets, including some hard gel lights, red, green, flashing. Yeah, yeah. It looks like Christmas or something, like Ron Howard was shooting the Grinch in that basement or something.
It was made in the 80s, but it totally looks like something from like the mid 60s.
Yeah.
Because like you were saying, I mean, there's a whole lot of gels. This thing is like, did they immediately jump into just pure comic book sci-fi trash that has like no depth whatsoever?
Yeah.
They're totally, totally, totally playing off of low audience expectations.
Yeah. And so
it's still pretty wild.
Yeah.
You know, but I as I'm watching this one, I still... Because like my high watermark for this genre, to this day is Dragon Lives Again.
Mm, Yes. It's a good one.
And this doesn't quite hit that level, but still, I mean,
no.
it's not quite as insane as that.
No.
But this is still pretty up there.
Yeah, no, this, so the important thing about the clones of Bruce Lee is this only works, in my opinion, because it's so bonkers.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
If it wasn't as bonkers as it is, it would be a total piece of garbage.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to say, for about the first 20 or 30 minutes of the movie, you will feel like it's a piece of garbage. Because it takes a little while to get going. Now, the fighting's good in those first 20 or 30 minutes. I'll say there's a lot of positives about the fight choreography. It's good. Now, if you know anything about Dragon Lee, he's very talented. Irvina Shevchenko, this is the only thing he ever did. So, but the other guys are pretty good. Irvina Shevchenko and Bruce Lee, whatever. They're pretty good too. And of course you get Bolo in there as well. So, you know, it's always nice to see Bolo. And if you're a fan of Hong Kong cinema, anytime Bolo shows up, you're like, oh, cool, man, there's that guy. So it's always good to see him. But it's really kind of sloppy and for all intents and purposes, so bonkers, it's kind of stupid. But yeah. But it decides to take it. I mean, it's already true exploitation in the beginning because it's already kind of exploiting the death of Bruce Lee and funeral footage and everything else. So it's true exploitation in that way. But it gets completely off. It goes completely off the rails at one point. And all of a sudden, you know, you're watching this PG-13 movie, which is rated R on IMDb. But on Amazon, if you watch it on there, be warned, it is a rated R movie. I guess it depends on what rated R is to you personally. But there is some nudity. And some silliness like that, that clearly would, you know, drive, you know, people to not want to watch it in front of their kids, maybe trying to explain a harem of what looks like Thai girls, walking around nude all the time, one of them dancing and stuff. Now they shy away from showing anything below the waist, but
they do that. Yeah. Although
they do show ass, you know, though.
But you get two Bruces plus two banana hammocks plus eight awkwardly dancing nude chicks applying oil and or lotion, yeah, and then one lanky gawking goof character.
Yeah,
and I think that the equation really kind of equals gold.
Yeah, it does.
At that point.
Well, I mean, so that's it. I mean, I think the saving grace of this movie is the fact that it is
as brazen as it's possible to be.
Yeah, it's brazen. It's dorky, for lack of a better word. Yeah. But it has some pretty good fight scenes that will keep you interested if you're into that. Now, in saying that, this suffers from, you know, some of that mid-70s to early 80s Chinese cinema stuff, which is, I know this sounds like a terrible thing to say, almost like a faux pas here to say this, but the fight scenes go on and on and on. And I think sometimes shorter would have been better, but they are entertaining for what they are. And there's lots of them. But at some point, our characters kind of run into... They kind of run into another mad doctor. So this movie doesn't give you one mad doctor that's creating clones of Bruce Lee. It gives you two mad doctors.
Yep.
One mad doctor creating the clones of Bruce Lee, and the other mad doctor / tyrant with the Thailand girls that are nude in his house.
Well, he's... Dude, he is the Thai Stuart Whitman.
Yes.
Easy. And as I refer to him, he's Dr. Nye, the bronze scientist guy.
Yeah. He's pretty great because how they dub him here is amazing. He's...
Yeah, if only he had a fucking long beard to throw over his fucking shoulder.
Yes. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah, if he just had something to stroke, like if he had long eyebrows and a long beard, you'd exactly know what kind of bad guy this is. But... He's fun, yeah. Stuart Whitman, a little Jim Jones in there, maybe. But certainly a lot of fun, and he comes up with this scheme where he turns characters into metal, as he says. Now they look like people that are the painted in gold with gold underwear on. It's some of the dumbest stuff you'll ever see, but in that way. That there's an innocence to it that somehow makes it entertaining. And I'll come back to that in a minute because I want to come back. I forgot about one thing I forgot about one thing I want to mention. I really wish there was a film that we could get a film version of White Tiger and Quick Panther, the two white guys that go after Dragon Lee at one point. Oh, my God. What great names. White Tiger and Quick Panther. Man, they really missed out. If there's not a White Tiger Quick Panther film out there, I really missed out on two of the most sloppy B-movie bad guys for a hero to fight. But I do find that funny. At one point, he's like, send a White Tiger and Quick Panther. They'll take care of it. And they send them, and Dragon Lee quickly. Well, not too quickly, as I said.
Yes.
That's not it, nothing's too quickly done here.
Well, it's you know, it's deliberately paced, as we like to say. Well,
this movie's just it's just strange in so many ways. It's you know when you see like a show, or hell, if you listen to this podcast and you get a lot of non sequiturs, this movie is a great example of non sequiturs. You know, so they get to this compound because they travel. Two of the Lees travel, Lee 2 and Lee 3. Mm-hmm. They travel to meet Chuck Lee, just to add to the confusion. And then you're watching a different type of Clones of Bruce Lee film, because for about 10 or 15 minutes, Dragon Lee disappears.
Yep.
And so now you're watching Chuck Lee and Lee 2 and Lee 3. Sorry. I'm confusing myself here. Not that it's not confusing enough. And these guys look like Bruce Lee clones walking around wherever they go. I think it's Thailand, right?
So, yes, Thailand.
And so they're in Thailand. They're walking around. You know, one of them's walking around without a shirt on. They end up at this. Yeah, they end up at this compound with the Mad Stuart Whitman, and they end up having to fight these gold soldiers, which are again are basically nude men with gold underwear on and gold paint on their bodies.
Dude, there's so much fucking bronze paint coming off of those guys.
Yeah. And then it turns into, and you know that stuff's not safe. It's probably that same kind of stuff that like Buddy Ebsen
used on Goldfinger.
Oh, yeah. It's that same kind of like flake stuff that they probably got in the lungs and everything else. Like, I wouldn't doubt if like two or three of those guys died of mesothelioma or something that.
Well, it doesn't help any that these guys are like super unimpressive in the physical condition department.
Oh, my God. These guys look like.
It's like if they had taken you and me and just fucking sprayed us with fucking bronze paint.
They look like.
And then threw gotchies on us and fucking pushed us in front of a camera.
They look like the Asian guys in Asian porn.
Indeed they do.
Yeah. So. They look about as natural as they can. I mean, that's what they look like. And you know, I'm just throwing it out there. You can do a quick Google search and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, dear.
But one of the great things about the metal men, little DC Comics reference there. One of the great things about it, though, is the way they get rid of these guys is both one of the most ingenious, impractical, and funniest things I've seen in some time. At one point, they kick one of the characters, one of the metal guys. And it's great because this movie's heavy on sound effects. So it's heavy on like the Bruce Lee wind sound effects.
Yeah,
remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever he used to do the, I don't know what that style of fighting he did was called. But
Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah, so he would do that. I didn't know what it was called, but I couldn't remember it, so forgive me. But when he would do all that stuff with his hand stuff here, you know, all that kind of stuff. Sorry, I'm blowing into the mic here. But
that's okay. That's kind of turning me on.
Yeah, there you go. He's doing all that, and so there's a lot of those sound effects. But when they're fighting the metal men, it's great because it's like dong, 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 dong. So you hear all this noise. And so at one point they knock this character down, and he falls into this what looks like seagrass or just some type of like rice shoots or something. He falls down. He just starts chewing them randomly. It's like like his body needs food.
And, dude, they love grass eating. Love it.
And they eat it like, you know, it's like slapstick. They eat the way they chew on it and stuff. And evidently it's poison, and they die. And so you get this really great scene where three Bruce Lee clones, or at least two Bruce Lee clones, go into a fight holding grass in their hands as weapons, which is essentially what they are. And then they're force feeding it into these metal guys, and these metal guys are dying. It's truly outrageous. That's the best way to describe
it. Gem.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I love that, and I thought it was so much fun. But yeah, the movie's really weird because I mean it borders on, you know, it's got the nudity, and then it's got so there's like some zombies, Well, I mean, obviously the metal guys are kind of zombies, but then there's another zombie-like thing at the end of the movie, which I won't get into.
Yeah, who was that guy? I mean, that's just out of the fucking blue. He just shows up. I loved it, but it's just, yeah. I'm sitting there like, what?
He looks
it's
straight.
It's such a what the fuck moment. It's like, yeah. What?
He looks like he came straight out of an Italian zombie movie, too. I mean, it's
oh,
like.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's so Italian zombie. It's ridiculous. And, it is worth the price of admission just to hang around for that. And it's a goofy, funny, and yet somehow nice homage to Bruce Lee himself in a weird way. I mean, I can't really describe the movie other than telling you it's bonkers in the best kind of way. It's not a genius piece of cinema. I should definitely put that out there. As much as I'm saying some positives about it, I have a lot of problems with the front end of it because it takes a long time to get going. But once it seals the deal and decides it's going to go, you know, it's just going to go for it.
Yeah.
I don't champion it, but I really do think at that point it at least tries something. And I'm in, you know, like I'm like, okay, I'm betting on that. I'm going to throw some money down on this now because I feel like it goes slower. So for the back half hour, back 45 minutes of the movie, it's only an 80 minute movie. So, but like the back half hour of it and stuff is so crazy that you'd be hard pressed to find anything more entertaining than that. I mean, it's just, especially if you like kung fu movies. I mean, if you don't like kung fu movies, then you're probably not going to get anything out of this anyway. If you're just kind of a, you know, person that dabbles in it every now and then, you might find some of it neat. If you're a person who has watched a lot of kung fu movies, and I remember seeing this when I was a kid, they would actually play this on Kung Fu Theater or something, and I would see this occasionally. I think I saw it under another title, though. I don't think it was Clones of Bruce Lee. But I thought for many years as a kid that this was a Bruce Lee movie. So that's the trick to the Bruceploitation genre right there. Yep. So when I was a kid, I thought Bruce Lee had a lot more movies than Bruce Lee actually did. Now we know now that Bruce Lee only had what, like five movies, six movies? I mean five or six original movies, right? I think there's
Yeah.
I think they may have cut him into other movies, but that's the ones we know of. Of course, he did some stuff before he did the Bruce Lee stuff that we know, but he tried acting in, you know, America first, and then I think he did some Hong Kong stuff, and then, you know, kind of moved back and forth. He was kind of a lost soul in the beginning a little bit, but I always kind of wanted to
and
a movie
he did
star.
TV. I mean, yeah. The Green Hornet.
And that's what I knew him as, because I saw Enter the Dragon. My mom and dad took me to the theater to see Enter the Dragon. How great's that? And we saw Enter the Dragon. Obviously, it was on a rerun because I think it came out in 73.
I believe it was around there, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, I was just born, so I don't remember that. But I do remember being young and going seeing that movie because I was terrified of the movie because John Saxon was in it. And I remember John Saxon as a android cyborg type character from The $6 Million Man. Where I think that was what it was.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
So yes, I do.
He used to terrify me because that image of the face coming off and seeing all the circuitry in her and stuff used to terrify me as a kid. And I told Saxon that one time when I'd met him one time. I said, you know, when I was a kid, I was absolutely terrified of you because of that one thing. And he said something to me about how you'd be surprised how a whole generation of kids are like, it's that creepy guy from $6
Million. Fucking scarred?
Yeah. It's great. If none of you guys are familiar with it, it's pretty great. One of the great things about $6 Million Man, it was genre television before there was any. Well, it was kind of like early genre television for us 70s boys, right? I mean, it was great. You know, you had Andre the Giant playing Sasquatch and.
Yeah, my God, big time. Dude, the fucking Death Probe fucking episodes I love. Yeah.
Now, you go back and watch that stuff, some of it's kind of brutal to watch, but.
Some of it is, but I think a lot more of it stands up enough than doesn't for me.
Mm. It was so huge for us. It was huge.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
Like TV in the 70s was so great for us because it was $6 Million Man, The Incredible Hulk.
Chips.
Was it? Chips and, oh, man. And the early 80s, too. I shouldn't leave the early 80s out, too, because, you know, like The Fall Guy, I wanted to be a stuntman.
Yeah, The Fall Guy, V.
Oh, God, V was
great.
Dude,
when V hit, I was, Jesus Christ, yeah. Come on.
TV was so great back then. And whenever I really want to get nostalgic, And don't get me wrong, TV's great now. It's probably better now than it's ever been. But,
well, yeah.
I mean, there's just, you know, we were kids. We were kids once, too, right? And so certain things hit us at the right time. And those things we just mentioned, like the A-Team, which would come along, too, all those things hit us at the right time, right? So
Yeah.
But that's kind of like, you know, this movie. It either hits you at the right time or it doesn't. And it's out there for those who want to watch it. It's on Amazon Prime. You can probably find it other ways. I wouldn't be surprised if the copy that's on Amazon Prime isn't exactly something somebody at Amazon downloaded and uploaded. It looks like something that's been taken off the internet and then thrown up there on a proper service.
Yeah, it's not something that's really been well archived.
Oh, no. Say, this film,
preserved.
Let's say that curation is not in this. It's not.
Well,
in this
it
film.
Isn't in the pretty much the entirety of Chinese cinema. It's very, it's a rare thing, unless it's a Shaw Brothers movie.
They've lost a lot of films as well over the years. And so has Japan, matter. I mean, a lot of these countries have. Again, we got to recall that, you know, film was a disposable entertainment at one point.
Yeah, indeed. Like comic books.
Yeah. And as think about that. And as much as that pains us to think that, because we love these things so dearly, you know, it's a business. And it's a disposable business. It's a business. You invest some money. You make some money. You toss it aside like toilet paper.
Move on to the next. Yeah. Move on to the next thing.
Nobody was going to rewatch these things. You know, for years that nobody... Nobody ever thought anybody'd ever get a chance to see something again. You'd only get to see the prestige things.
Yep.
So, you know, but there's a whole bunch of us now who, you know, we want, you know, the stabilizer in 4K. Yes, we do.
Yeah. I'm one of them. I'm okay with that.
Hey, I'll take, if somebody can get the Clones of Bruce Lee on Blu-ray and get that thing rezzed up and everything
I think it might be.
Well, I can tell you right
if
now.
If not.
While you're talking, because I'm getting ready to pass it over to you, I'm getting ready to do a search. Because if there's a high definition quality,
Dragon Lee.
I mean, I didn't love this movie, but I certainly liked it enough that it would easily go into my library and I would completely be happy with having it and I would show it to people.
Oh God. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Cause it was totally. Fun. And I'm pretty sure my computer's listening to me because, Curse of Frankenstein.
It just came up with.
Well, no, Curse of Frankenstein. We were talking about it last week, but Curse of Frankenstein, the Hammer film is only $14 on Blu-ray right now.
So, dude, I might have to jump on that.
I know. I might be
that's one of my favorite Hammers, and I think that version on Blue has like additional scenes.
Yeah, well,
I think it's like it's either an extended cut or they have additional scenes as features.
Pretty sure,
if I'm not mistaken.
Pretty sure I'll be finding out. Let's put it that way. But all right, I'll kick it over to you.
All right, so a couple other things, not really a whole lot in terms of revelations. So yeah, there's really more bruises in this thing than in an Australian walkabout. for those of you who get that joke, but you know, one of the things about this genre in general, or this sub genre, is that, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, the Italians were always really big on exploiting fads. You know, for a while there, like every single Western had a Django, and every people had a Hercules or a Samson. But I, you know, it's really odd because few, if any, other performers really had an entire subgenre all to themselves. I mean, unless you include Elvis, although his stuff, nobody that I can think of ever really made Elvis exploitation movies. Unless you want to count like 3,000 Miles to Graceland. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I don't want to include that either. But
no. I
mean, he's got the performers.
Yeah,
who do it like as a living, but by that same token, then there's not a whole lot of like people who go around doing like Bruce Lee performances live.
Yeah.
So it's this weird sort of dichotomy, and I it's just odd that, you know, out of all these guys who died, it's just so bizarre. That they took off on Bruce Plantation like they did. And maybe this is because, you know, action can disguise a whole lot. And I suspect that, you know, given when and where these things came from, they kind of hoped that audiences couldn't totally tell the difference.
So I looked up Clones of Bruce Lee, and there is a Blu-ray out there, but it says Bruce Plantation collection 0 of 100, extremely limited. I would say this is probably somebody... If I had to guess, I'm not knocking anybody for doing this because I appreciate the work you're putting in there, But I would say this is probably, yeah, self-made stuff. So
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know how high. I'm talking about a completely remastered copy is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, not that I'm aware of.
That's what I mean.
The copy that I have is actually decent quality for the most part. Mm-hmm. But it's not. Yeah, there's a whole lot of blemishes on it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I wanted to get that out there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I absolutely love that Bolo Young, or the, I should say the dubbing of Bolo Young is basically a John Wayne imitation. it's so fucking great. Oh, my God. When you see Bolo Young and you're just like, you're expecting him to say something like, you are next. And he doesn't. Yeah. He goes, oh, so that's a pretty good. Yeah.
So he doesn't wear a jacket in this, so he can't do the Bolo Young, take the jacket off and throw it down and then heave with the breath and everything. But he does do the other Bolo Young thing I love, which is he rubs his jaw.
He is a good jaw rubber in the same way that that Toshirô Mifune is a great beard scratcher.
Yes, yes. I mean, there's certain things certain actors do.
Yes.
And I've seen a tremendous amount of Bolo Young films. I'm sure you probably have. He's just one of those actors who pops up in a lot of movies we watch. And I'd bet that he rubs his jaw after taking a punch or a kick in every film he's ever made.
Yeah, that's his, what you call it? His, signature.
Yeah, it's one of them. Certainly.
His signature move. Well, yeah. That bouncing his titties.
Yeah. Flexing his pecs. I was going to say, which I'm doing that. I'm doing that right now. Yeah. All right,
buddy. I want some video here. Mm. So, you know, as a certain segment of Chinese cinema did, this movie not only steals from, Bruce Lee, but also from scores from American movies, like we were saying off screen. In this one, we get Rocky. We get the Warriors.
Yeah.
And they really stand out when you hear them. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. But that's one of those things. It's just another one of those things where you're just sitting there like, man, Chinese filmmakers just had no fucking... There's no...
Yeah.
No... what's the word I'm looking for? Shame?
No shame. Yeah.
Just being as fucking ballsy as you could possibly be.
I mean, there's close to Italian filmmaking as possible. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah. Well, even the Italians, I mean, didn't quite go this far nearly as often.
I think the only country that rips people off more, we all know of, which is Turkey. So I don't think, you know, I think the level is probably Turkey, China, and then Italy when it comes to rip-offs. I mean...
Yeah.
That's probably the... I mean, I'm talking about the most ripping off. That would probably be the echelon.
And then India.
Yeah, India does it too. But India always has that element of uniqueness to it, in that they try to mix in a little bit of their cultural stuff a little bit more, I think.
Well, yeah, it's much more of a take than a straight rip.
Yeah.
I would agree with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, Turkish cinema is just it's just pure rips. And then China is notorious for it. I mean, obviously, you know, there's a large bootleg market there anyway, but I mean, they have no shame when it comes to ripping things off.
No shame in their game, sir.
No. And of course, Bruceploitation is a great example of them ripping themselves off.
Yes, it is. naturally the ambition of this thing far exceeds the budget. I mean, scenes that are not shot in the outdoors are in either like utterly spare sort of sets or in actual locations that are threadbare with like paint peeling off the walls and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, what the movie delivers on, and you kind of went over this already, what it does deliver on is martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And there is more than enough of that in this thing.
Oh, my God.
it is wall to wall.
Yeah.
Martial arts. So I mean,
to the point,
you got to give them that much credit.
Yeah,
in that they actually, you know, they delivered on that much.
Oh yeah, no. If you're a fan of fight scenes, you're going to be perfectly happy with this movie because
oh my God, yeah,
it's fat with them. But it's also one of those movies where like I'm watching it in the other room, and consistently my kids or my wife are coming in going, "What the hell are you watching?" Because all they can hear is. Psh, 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 psh.
Yes,
that's all they hear, and every now and then somebody else like, "What?" It's one of those movies. I mean, it's
well, this is, I mean, yeah, because yeah, it's It's not like outstandingly choreographed or anything like this. This is not Yuen Woo Ping, you know, level of stuff.
No.
But really to the shock of no one, but it's adequate. And you know, this is really a quantity over quality kind of deal.
Yeah.
Like you said, like we've been saying.
More like a B-grade Shaw Brothers type stuff.
Yeah.
That would be the best way I'd put the fighting. It's like, it's not quite as good or as choreographed as Shaw Brothers stuff, but it's kind of like right under there.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, yeah, I mean, obviously the flamboyance is kept to the plot rather than the visual stylistics, let's say.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, the filmmakers just can't get away from the whole patented Chinese style of broad comedy. Like there's the scene at the movie studio with that cross-eyed sycophant character. it's one of those things where you see it, you're like, oh, that's right, this was made in China.
Yeah, I can't believe I didn't put it in my notes. Yeah, I didn't put it in my notes, but I forgot all about the makeshift movie set. I mean, this is as bad of a fake movie set as I have ever seen in any movie ever made.
Oh my God, yes.
Like, we're shooting on a blue background, and here's a different color blue on the floor. It's terrible.
It's like if they were shooting an outdoor scene, but like on AstroTurf.
It's so bad. But yeah, I like that scene a lot though, because I do like that bad guy. He sits there and he's watching, and he's not expecting anything. And then Dragon Lee does his thing, and he's all of a sudden, you just get that reaction shot, which is all shit. Which is great.
Oh my God. I mean, the film explicitly refers to what it is with that instance with the film producers. Mm-hmm. It literally just says, hey, what if we, you know, did this, that, or the other thing with the, you know, the real Bruce Lee and then killed this one. And it's also, I found it in that it makes a pretty, like, kind of chilling prediction for what would happen to Brandon Lee later on.
Yeah.
With that aspect. Like, it's uncomfortable in a way because you're just like, yeah, I get that, like, nobody saw this actually coming, but at the same time they're throwing it out there and you're just like, oh, that's a little on the creepy side.
I
do find it funny, and obviously, I mean, it kind of has to be, that the whole premise of the movie is predicated on the idea of Bruce Lee being used as a puppet super soldier or super soldiers. Mm-hmm. For a Western intelligence agency. Mm-hmm. Kind of like Return of the Dragon in a way. Enter the Dragon. But the movie, you know, it has a tendency to get lost in itself, and like it's all about like side adventures kind of in a way, which isn't really surprising, given again its nature. And you know, this is the kind of movie where it forgets its focus entirely a whole lot. But you know, by the same token, it's never, I think, totally unentertaining. Like you can feel it wandering, you could feel it becoming pointless, but you don't totally mind that, or at least I don't. And that even includes, you know, the wealth of travelogue footage that you get in like Thailand and that. And speaking of Thailand, the fight in Thailand, the first fight in Thailand, I just kept thinking of all the snakes that could be hiding in that tall, unmowed grass. And I was just like, oh my God, I couldn't do that. Because it would freak me the fuck out. That's all I would need is for something to fucking move over my foot. And I would lose my fucking mind. The movie then, the final 20 minutes, it pulls the ace up its sleeve. It's one of these things that makes about as much sense as the rest of the picture has. And it has as much to do with anything else as the rest of the picture, too. And, you know, the one thing that I kept thinking of while I'm watching the final, like, 20 minutes or so of this movie is I kept thinking to myself of Al Adamson's Dracula versus Frankenstein. Because it's that stupid and that fun at the same time while all of this is kind of unspooling in front of your eyes. Now, of all of the clones, and we kind of pointed at this a little bit before, the Dragon Lee character is the one who not only looks most like the actual Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. But he really, really hard sells the whole act more than the others do.
Yeah.
Like the other guys are just kind of like lounging around, kind of like, yeah, I look like Bruce Lee, man. But this guy, he goes for it. He does the fucking, you know, the thumb to the nose thing. He does, all of the little characteristics of Bruce Lee that we've seen in his career. So yeah, I appreciated that too. But yeah, no, I mean, this is one of those things where you really kind of have to see it to believe it. And I had a lot of fun with it. This was a first timer for me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if you ever saw it and didn't know you saw it. Well, no, probably you would have remembered this.
You would, yeah. No, I would have remembered this.
Yeah, you would have remembered
this. This would have stuck on me like shit to a rabbit's ass. I had a lot of fun with it. And I would recommend it to anybody to seek out, because it's just so, it's so much fun to just kind of, you know, be taken in by how insane it is. And just the fucking sheer balls it took to do this and stuff like it. It's just amazing to me. It's amazing.
I would say it's one of the better Bruce Exploitation films, no doubt. There's some good ones, but this is definitely, I mean, it's not great, but it's pretty good.
Well, it's not great filmmaking, but then again, you don't go into this looking for great filmmaking.
No.
So
I think you know in the first 5 minutes that this is not going to be that kind of
God,
movie.
Yeah. You know, the first 10 seconds.
Yeah.
The level of quality that they're aiming for here.
All right. Make a break for me. I'm going to go with the Dr. Goldfoot and his bronze zombies. I kind of enjoy that quite a bit. Had a good time with that. I was looking at pictures of Dragon Lee today.
Naked?
No. He's a dapper, dapper man.
Is he?
Yeah. He's aged well. I don't know if he's doing anything anymore. I don't know if he does any films anymore or anything. I didn't really look him up or anything while we were talking about it. But like I said, I think he's got a nice look. And, you know, obviously he's a physical presence. I'm looking now to see if he's done anything recently. My MVT, speaking of which, is Dragon Lee. I do enjoy him. Looks like he retired. 1994 was the last film he did, Emperor of the Underworld.
Hmm.
So he hasn't done anything since then. So I guess he just walked away.
Right.
Probably got tired of being compared to Bruce Lee.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Well, I mean, you know.
That's what he made his bones on, so.
Yeah. So it's kind of a shame, though, because, I mean, I think he's pretty good in front of the camera.
Be careful what you fucking wish for kind of deal, isn't it?
Yeah. I think he's pretty good in front of the camera, though, so it's kind of a shame that he walked away.
No, he is. He has enough charisma that, you know, if he wasn't, you know, simply aping an actual other person, he could have been a little bit more. He could have been a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? Distinctive?
Yeah. Of course, he's 81 years old now. I don't think
good
he'll be doing
Christ.
Anything. Don't think he'll be doing anything. But he still looks pretty good for his age. Like I said, he's my MVT. He's the thing I enjoy the most about the movie. The best way I can describe it is I think the film's more electric when he's on screen.
I would agree with that.
It just feels like it's got a bit more oomph when he's on screen. Mm-hmm. So, but everybody's pretty good in the movie for what they're asked to do. My score is 6.75. I don't love it, but because it's clunky filmmaking. But I got to say, I had a great time. And that score might sound kind of low, but I mean, for me, anything that gets in the 7 ballpark area or near that, 6.5, 7, I mean, it's something I'll rewatch at some point. So it's the kind of movie that I would show people. It's that kind of movie because it's fun. So it's pretty cool. Oh, I didn't know Dragon Lee was actually, he's ethnic Korean from the former Soviet Union. How about that?
Okay, then.
So he's.
You learned something new today on GGTMC.
You do. How about that? I didn't even know that.
I had no idea.
Has a chain of cinemas in Korea. So there you go. I guess he got out of the making the movies and started showing movies.
Good for him.
So these Bruce Lee guys or these Bruce Lee exploitation guys. Interesting backgrounds. Anyway, I'll kick it over to you.
All right, cold beans. So make or break for me. I mean, yeah, it's the Bronze Soldier segment, but it's more than that. It's the moment when they actually wind up defeating the Bronze Soldiers, like how they wind up defeating them. Because I mean, you're sitting there, and this is when the switch goes off in my head, and I'm like, you know, somebody actually dreamed this shit up. Yes. Like somebody actually sat down and said, hey, this is what we're going to do with this very expensive equipment and all of this fucking money that we're throwing at this thing. This is where we're going to go with it. And it just is amazing to me. And by that same token, my MVT is the, I'm a little bit cheating on this. It's the combination of insanity and stupidity that this thing mixes so well. And score for me, I'm just a hair higher than you. I'm a 7 out of 10 on this.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that this is something I would absolutely rewatch.
Nice.
And, yeah, I mean, it's just to see this thing is to kind of fall in love with it in a way, even though you really kind of feel bad about falling in love with it. But by that same token, I mean, you know, that's what it is. So
Yeah. No, it's a weird feeling. It's a weird feeling watching movies like these. Yeah. It's strange.
Yeah, it really, really is.
Like some folks I can see won't even watch a Bruce Exploitation film probably because they think it's tasteless, and I get that.
Sure.
But, you know, it is an exploitation movie. It's purely that. So don't expect anything more than that. And I think you'll be fine. All right. That's our thoughts on The Clones of Bruce Lee. Again, it's on Amazon Prime for those who have that in the States anyway. It's out there if you want to get it otherwise. And obviously there's a limited 100 run Blu-ray out there, I guess. So if you've got to have that physical copy, there you go. But yeah, check it out. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and discuss. What are we talking about? They Call Me Bruce. So we'll talk about
that. They Call Me Bruce. They Call Me Bruce?
Yeah, They Call Me Bruce. We'll be back right after this. Yeah. All right.
So that happened.
You rock and rock. I could have played the theme song from this movie, They Call Me Bruce, but I hate it, so I'm not going to play it.
Oh, the very, very, very disco oriental boy by Mia Kim.
Yeah, I'll play a little bit of it here so people can get an idea. But sometimes, you know, I always, even songs I don't like, I try to work them into the show. Sorry, I'm moving my mic around.
It's all right. I'm moving my mic around too, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. And
a little pole position.
Oriental Boy by the Flirts. Never heard that version, if that's the same version. Anyway, the Kim sisters. There it is right there, right? Mia, Oriental
Mia
Boy.
Kim. Yeah.
So I'll play a little bit of it here. Let me, first I'll, oops, I think
this is the checkers game where.
Well, we don't want to hear.
Well,
that.
I don't want a checkers game.
Well, yeah, you do.
Well, Chinese checkers, maybe.
Yeah, so here we go.
Boom.
Playing a little bit of it there. Come on, baby.
So wait, in this review, we're allowed to say Orientals?
Yes, because they say it often in this one.
Often.
There we go. This was unreleased. I can't imagine why.
For a reason.
Oh my God, it's bad. Oh my God. Oh, it's so bad.
Watch out. Go, go, go.
Oh my God, turn it off. It's just too much.
Oh, it's so good.
Like a kung fu dragon. Anyway, all right.
Oh, Lordy.
They Call Me Bruce, 1982. Now, this is going to be fun to talk about, I think, because, first of all, this movie's it's something. A goofy Korean finds his life hopelessly complicated with people continually confusing him with Bruce Lee. So it has an undercurrent of racism right from the get-go, okay?
Sure.
But, you know, it is what it is because it's playing on that stereotype. But also, this movie was a massive hit. A lot of people might not know that. It only cost about $1 million to make, and I think it made $16 million. So even though $16 million might not sound like a lot of money, when it only costs $1 million to make, it's a pretty big return. So saying that, it generated a sequel. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that Johnny Yoon might have directed the sequel himself. I'm not positive on that, but I'd have to look. But anyway, this one's directed by Elliot Hong. Johnny Yoon, who those of you who might not know, he didn't do a whole lot. He showed up in a lot of TV, again, when we were kids. He'd show up in things like MASH.
Yep.
And a few other shows. And, you know, he's in the odd movie. I mean, if you see him, it's not like you ain't ever seen him before, but he probably is best known for They Call Me Bruce.
Yes.
And it's something. So let's talk about this. This is also known as a chopstick comedy.
So, oh, dear Lord.
Yeah, so.
Look at my face. I'm an Oriental.
It's something, let me tell you.
Well, you know, and you know, getting back to the fantastic Mia Kim and her Oriental Boy song, you know, as cringy as that song is, both stylistically and lyrically, it's actually, you know, if you actually listen to the lyrics, it's about overcoming obstacles and succeeding.
Sure,
and that's basically what the movie is. Really, mm-hmm. When you peel off all the other stuff, the surface elements.
What's interesting about this movie is how many, you know, we talked about an exploitation movie that rips stuff off with the clones of Bruce Lee. But what's interesting is how many movies that this kind of rips off. Now, obviously, this is doing it this is doing it in the sense of parody. But
I
had forgotten that this riffs on Staying Alive. That it riffs on the Warriors a little bit.
It rips on Rocky, Life Cereal, Kung Fu the Series, Schlitz Malt Liquor.
Yes, all these things.
It's very, very topical.
It's a pop culture movie is what it is.
Oh, big, big, big time.
In 1982, people weren't making a whole lot of pop culture films, so maybe that's why it generated so much box office. I mean, maybe that's why.
That when they were making pop culture movies, they tended to be anthology stuff like Kentucky Fried Movie, that sort of thing, or the Groove Tube.
Or Zucker Brother stuff, right? Like Top Secret, The Airplane, obviously, and you know, these topical B, you know, parody, hardcore parody movies. And this is trying for that, I think, but the comedy here is going to go, well, it's going to depend on the person.
It's heavily going to depend on the person.
Yeah, and I'm not saying because of the race element of the story, which, you know, that's one thing, and that's there, clearly. We can say that, but I think more it's just how kind of bland the humor is. I mean, it's really, me and Ty were joking off air. I mean, the comedy here, there's a few bits that are genuinely funny. I will say that. Oh, yeah. There's a few things. I chuckled a couple times, but for the most part, it's really just cheesy one-liners.
Yeah, well, I mean, and Johnny Yoon, he was a comedian, but he was a comedian in the old variety show sort of way. Yes, so, you know, the comedy in the movie is sort of, you know, quick zinger type stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, he does, you know, shtick like the Achu Afong jokes. You know, his humor, I think that, you know, his humor was all about the differences in cultures. Which also, you know, it should be mentioned that he was, Johnny Yoon was actually Korean and Japanese. He was not Chinese, even slightly.
Yes.
So, I mean, that in and of itself, it makes it kind of odd. But, you know, you get, okay, so the movie has, I love grandfather's dying advice is broads. Yeah, and you think to yourself at first, so this is going to be like a sex comedy. So, well, no. But
sort of though, I mean, it's a PG sex comedy because Johnny
Yoon. Well, there's some tit, but
yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. There is. I forgot all about.
Actually,
that.
I think Johnny Yoon shows more fucking skin than anybody else does.
Actually, the tit joke in here is the meanest joke in the whole movie.
How about it? And it's also a little bit on the cringy side, like the creepy side.
Yeah, it really
he's
is.
Like, he's like, you're a 10 where you should be a 36, and you're like, whoa there, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, wow. That's and then,
because she is not she's not what we would say, what we would call stacked.
No, she is not. She is clearly an A-cup.
Yes,
but it's indeed. But it's, yeah, it's an uncomfortable, awkward, even though there's a lot of innocence to Johnny Yoon's humor.
Yes.
And the goofiness and the dumbness with which he plays the Bruce character.
Yeah.
It's an overly mean joke. You know, in a completely like laid back kind of comedy movie. It's very strange. Yeah. It's very strange. It's
sort of innocent sort of comedy.
Yeah.
So stereotypes. You have stuff like, you know, the Italians and this are all boobas, and they play like fucking classic mafia music in quotes. The Vegas Jews are like really, really Jewy.
Oh, man.
So you have all these things. But, you know, it's just like with the June character, the Johnny Yoon character. The joke is not that he's mistaken for Bruce Lee. It's that he's mistaken for Bruce Lee because all Asians look alike.
Yes.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like, and yet the movie, you know, the movie trades in this stuff as much as I think it is commenting on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we get stuff like the Japanese tourists with the cameras and on, which is, you know, the classic Japanese tourist sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I find it funny because, you know, the people who are actually doing martial arts in this movie are all white folks, which I kind of got a chuckle out of that one, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, Yoon, he plays this sort of this gormless sort of fella. He's, you know, he's good natured, he's simple, and that's really his appeal. He doesn't know actual kung fu worth a shit, obviously, but you know, he has dreams and he has a goal, and he does worship at the altar of Bruce Lee, and he, you know, he plays on this to protect himself, mm-hmm. Which of course, you know, never works. We do get in this movie another Tom Rosales appearance. Only a couple weeks after the Hunter episode. So
how about that? Yeah.
So yeah. So not only are you hitting all the Tracy Walter movies of the '80s, but you're also hitting all the Tom Rosales movies of the '80s.
Two of my favorite character actors. Yes.
How about it? So the way the movie is structured, there's this, you know, goofy standard plot with the gangsters and the drugs and all this other stuff, and this is interspersed with Yoon doing his like these little mini skits, and I think that it works well enough for that. But the movie's also kind of forgets about Yoon's mission to New York that he's kind of tasked with at the very beginning with his grandfather,
mm-hmm.
And the movie forgets about all that kind of thing until it's convenient again.
Yes.
I think that Hong's direction is competent, nothing more. But it really doesn't have to be for this kind of thing.
No, because it's skit comedy.
Yeah. So yeah, you're not here to be a visual stylist. This is not Kubrick.
No. This is
you need to get from A to B.
Yeah.
And sell it.
That's
what he does.
This is all relying on setting up the joke and then paying it off.
And exactly.
And that's all it's for. And
for that it works.
Yeah, for that it does work. I agree with what you said in the beginning. I mean, so this is an equal opportunity offender. If anybody finds this offensive,
that's on you.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that would have to be on the person because it's making fun of Italians. It's making fun of African Americans. It's making fun of everybody. It's basically Yoon going with the stereotype type comedy. Now, obviously, that's not popular nowadays, and that's a whole other conversation. We're not going to get into that. But the truth is, this is the way comedy was for a long time. Mm-hmm. And in that way, it kind of works. I enjoy it, but at the same time, the biggest problem I have is quite a few of the jokes, going back and looking at this now as a 48-year-old man, a lot of the jokes are like wounded birds. They try to fly, but they're not getting anywhere. But some
I got a kick out of a lot of it.
Yeah, but
a lot more than I expected.
Yeah,
a lot more than I anticipated.
So I'm glad you say that, because I started watching this and I got a couple. First of all, the Broads joke is funny. It's just because I forgot all about it and I didn't know what he was going to say, and then he goes Broads, and I'm just like, yeah, nice, and I got a good chuckle out of that. But there is a lot of moments, and it comes down to essentially Johnny Yoon playing this dumb.
Yes.
Layman type character, this basically oblivious, stupid character, essentially like a Jim Carrey character in a lot of ways. From some of those movies, are like a the Dumb and Dumber characters, kind of ubiquitous and just strange stupidity
yeah.
beyond normal stupidity, and because he's so. I don't know if the word's charismatic or infantile. And when I say infantile, I don't mean it in a negative way. There's something about Yoon's performance that makes you kind of get on his side.
Well, it's an innocence.
Yeah.
He trades on this innocence that the character has. And I think that he hides sort of a certain, I don't want to say sophistication. I don't think that's the word.
Mm.
But he hides a certain kind of slyness behind
that like there's a level of, is this a word, adeptness,
yes,
like the character's adept at getting through what he needs to get through, but
the
fun in the movie is watching him stumble through all that.
Yes.
And that really ultimately that's the joke of the movie. Yeah, there's stereotypical humor in here, but really the joke of the movie is watching a dumbass.
Yeah.
A fun, goofy dumbass get through. So in a lot of ways, it's like old school slapstick comedy.
Oh, and a hugely dedicated to all that sort of
thing. Yeah, because that's all old slapstick was usually a dumb character or a ne'er-do-well innocent character getting in extreme situations and then somehow finding their way to the end of the story. So
right.
That's what you got here.
So, yeah, I mean, and there's a lot in here that's, obviously not PC, like Jun referring to himself as Oriental, but this is when that was the phrase, right? I mean,
yes,
people called Asian people Oriental. I mean, that was just, it wasn't intended as anything.
No.
But, I don't know that I consider this movie racist, per se.
No, I don't.
Because I don't think that the intent here has anything to do with denigrating one race over another.
No.
Or sexist for that matter, though it does trade on, men leering over pretty women. But, the intent here is to make you laugh by poking fun at these things.
Yeah.
Same thing as, same as something like Blazing Saddles, if a bit more like, this is a bit more blatant.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. But at the same time, it's that same level of of what they're trying to do.
I don't
consider that racist, and I don't consider this racist. And I think that if somebody does consider it racist, they're really not wearing the right pair of glasses watching it.
No, they're not. Because I right off the bat, I mean, like I said, this movie is an equal opportunity it's making fun of all stereotypes that we that we have culture.
The Bill Kirchenbauer character. He's called the Polish Killer.
Oh God!
And that routine, I gotta say, I kind of loved it, because I always loved I always liked the idea of like the nebbish assassin.
Yes.
Not that I think it's that like outstandingly done here, but I still, that's one of those things that I just find appealing. And Bill Kirchenbauer. I mean, when was the last time you saw Bill Kirchenbauer outside of like just the 10 of us?
Well, I think me and you saw him. Well, I think Full Moon High. Then we did. Because I had a moment and I was like, when was the last time I saw Bill Kirchenbauer? And I'm like, wait a minute. I saw him in Full Moon High.
His
scene is one of those scenes where it's like, hey, Bill, we got this dummy. We got these weapons. You're an assassin. You're kooky.
Go for it.
And it goes on a little too long, but it is genuinely funny. At least I found it genuinely funny.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
And then when
he actually acts upon what he's supposed to do, that might actually be funnier.
Yeah. And, kind of in that same way, I love the Margot Hemingway, because who the fuck, Margot Hemingway's name appears in the titles and in the credits, and you're like, well, what?
Yeah.
But she shows up, and she's doing this Amazonian routine
in
this thing. And it's, it's a little something different that we don't see much of in movies. And certainly not at this time to see a woman that's that kind of aggressive.
Yeah, she might have the most. She might not have the most kung fu in the movie.
Yeah, right. I mean, like I said, the people doing kung fu in this movie are not Orientals.
No.
So, no. And speaking of, there are some decent stunts here and there, but this was also that sort of the Hal Needham era for this kind of lark. So it's, you know, it's never not less than solid. I think that, I need to ask of you and of the audience, is it wrong that I wanted to see more of Big L's dominatrix character?
No.
Because she shows up there and you're just like, oh, I want to see more of that one.
Yeah.
But you don't get more than that. But and I love how, you know, there was a time in Hollywood where just about every single comedy that they produced not only featured cocaine, but treated it like it was the greatest stuff in the world. Yeah. And it's really just an odd sort of thing, especially when you look back on it now.
Yes, it is.
Because, I mean, I never did coke, so I couldn't tell you whether it's great or sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, for those of you who did, I guess, you know, hey, this is the movie for you because there's a lot of fucking coke flying around this thing. Like, a lot. And, you know, I don't think that you will ever see an ending like this movie has these days when they finally track down the woman mentioned in the opening scene. I don't think that it would be done. I just don't. For whatever political reason, which I'm not about to get into because I'm having too much fun with this review. But that's my opinion.
Yeah, I just don't think with a film like this you can even talk politics because I don't think it's.
Well, I don't think. Yeah, it really just doesn't.
It's not warranted.
They just don't apply.
Yeah, it don't.
They just don't apply. I mean, there's a certain level of, you could talk about how people who find fault with this thing for the wrong reasons. I think you could talk politics in that sort of way.
Sure.
But other than that, I mean, yeah, no.
I was thinking about Margot Hemingway. You know, it's interesting. You know, the Hemingway family, and she probably looks more like her grandfather than Mariel does.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting to me, you know, if people ever think that, you know, certain things aren't genetic. I mean, she committed suicide as well at 42. You know, I mean, Jesus. I mean, most of her family has killed themselves. Has basically committed suicide. So obviously, you know, you can say what you want to say, but I mean, obviously there is a direct, you know, link to some of that.
Yeah.
And it's
that's sad.
It is sad. It is sad. Obviously there's, you know, a genetic link there. That's just, I don't know. It's just, it's really sad.
Well, it feels like it feels like there's a sort of, without a net, sort of aspect to the family dynamic, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That these things happen more than they should.
Yeah, the fifth Hemingway to commit suicide.
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, that's some scary stuff. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah. No, and on that cheery note.
Yeah. Sorry. I just brought the whole thing down. Sorry.
Yeah, man. Come on. You're not an Oriental.
Well, there's some debate that she did kill herself. She was found, I believe, just kind of laying in bed. Okay. If I remember when I was a kid,
I don't know the details of it. I just remember that it happened.
But I remember that when I was a kid, I remember reading some article or something that she was found in bed with, like, you know, a book in her lap and things like that. And I remember thinking, well, somebody might, you know, I was old enough to think about the kind of dark side of Hollywood at that point. And I just thought, you know, well, maybe somebody killed her. You know, but, you know, yeah, whatever. I mean, I'm being a little dark and twisted here, but I mean, you know, it's interesting to me just that Hemingway bloodline that there's this direct link to these suicides. And it's just, you know, it fascinates me, not in a way like I'm going to get off of the podcast today and go up and make a cake, but it's but in the way that I just find it fascinating that something like that can genetically pass. People, you know, I just find that
fascinating. And that's an entire debate in and of itself.
It is.
I don't particularly buy that myself.
Yeah.
But
I can understand that. I can understand that angle too. Yeah, she's six foot tall, Margot.
How about it? Yeah, and she really looks shows that off here.
Yeah.
She towers over everybody in this fucking movie.
She really does. She really
does. Not just the Orientals. I insist on continuing to say that word. So anyway. But you know, at the end of the day, I find the good naturedness of all this idiocy really. I think the word I would use is disarming. Mm. And I freely admit that I laughed quite a bit during this thing, and I was grinning from ear to ear the majority of the runtime. I don't think that this is, you know, I don't think this is a classic per se by any no. real stretch of the imagination. It's not really a barn burner or anything like that, but it's fun. And I think that, you know, these days, especially these days, this kind of reckless fun is perhaps what this country needs a bit more of. And I had fun with it. I had a lot more fun with this than I had anticipated having. I thought that it was going to be kind of a pain train.
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of ways. And there are some things in it that are. But at the same time, I had way more fun with this than I should have.
Yeah.
And you know, I kind of wound up loving it in a certain odd sort of way.
It's funny. It's funny you say that because even me picking it, you know, in my picking it was mostly, I watched this a lot on cable growing up, and you know, found it funny then. But you know, growing up, what you think is funny, you revisit when you get older. It's not always quite as funny.
Sure, most times.
Yeah, most times. And I would say there's parts of this that aren't as funny as I once thought they were.
Sure.
Just because I've grown up and I'm just like, you know, that's kind of stupid. But at the same time, there's a part of me that can appreciate the honesty of the movie. I think that's basically, you know, that's kind of sums up what you're saying in a nutshell, too. There's a frankness and an honestness to it that I think is just charming. And, you know, it made me, after I got done watching, I don't know how you felt, but it made me, after I got done watching, I wanted to watch They Still Call Me Bruce.
Yeah, right.
Because I was like,
no, I'm not going to, because I'm not going to ruin this good feeling.
Yeah, that's the thing. I thought, well, this is going to be painful. I've picked a movie that I know is going to be painful for us to watch.
Sure.
But it turned out to be just kind of breezy.
It really, really is.
Certainly not great. No, I mean, it's not that. But
it's good enough.
I think this week's show can essentially be summed up to, well, first of all, it can be summed up to this. They're PG movies with lots of boobies. So just to keep it grown up and GGTMC,
bing, bang, boom.
But it can be summed up as these kind of laid back, really breezy, kind of fun, essentially what the show is all about, kind of midnight cinema type films. I mean, these are the kind of movies you'd kind of just happen upon by accident in a lot of ways, and you're just kind of like, what is this, you know? And that's it. I remember, so kind of a behind the scenes thing, I said something to Todd about covering this, and Todd's like, is that the one with the bull? And, of course, that's the second
one. That
is
the sequel. Yeah.
That is the sequel, yes. Which is interesting because it's got Joey Travolta in there, Robert Gilliam's in there. Irma Hall's in there. That'd be interesting to talk about. David Mendenhall's in there. You know, no time soon. But I'd have to see it again. I haven't seen it in forever, but it's got a great poster. Him riding that bull. Is that all you got? Is that all you got, really?
That's all I got, sir. All right.
I agree pretty much with everything you say, though. I mean, I think it was just, I don't know. It felt like just this kind of trip down memory lane of what movies used to be or what comedies used to be. Comedies are always broad cinematically. And I agree with what a lot of celebrities say, and that doing comedy is hard, because I do believe it is hard, because being funny is so subjective.
Because it's so specific.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some people can deliver anything, any line, and be funny. And some folks, I mean, it's a lot of work.
Sure.
And it's interesting how it works. It's just such a subjective type thing. But it's funny, you know, we mentioned all the equal opportunity offenders, if there are any in here. But what about the 80s and late 70s and the Hare Krishna jokes? I mean.
Yeah, right? Oh, yeah.
Our childhoods.
They got those here, too, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Our childhoods are filled with Hare Krishna jokes.
Oh, God, yeah.
For a whole generation of kids and adults, the Hare Krishna, the minute you see them in anything, you know a joke is coming. Somebody's going to.
You know violence is swiftly coming behind it.
Yeah. So this one's kind of fun, though.
People wanted to beat the shit out of Hare Krishnas like it was nobody's business.
Yeah, but this one's kind of fun, and I think kind of genius because he flips the script. Here the Hare Krishnas commit the violence.
Yep.
Which is kind of fun because obviously I'm watching this again, and I haven't seen this since I was, Jesus, Todd, before maybe 12, 14 years old. I mean, who knows? Yeah, I haven't watched it in years, okay? I never rented it. I never bought a copy of it. So the last time I watched it, I had to have been living in my mom and dad's house and whatnot and had to have watched it on cable. I've not watched it since then. It just came across on my Amazon Prime thing, and I was just like, yeah, let's do that. But I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, okay, here's the Hare Krishnas. Now somebody's either going to spill some noodles on them or, you know, throw a pie in their face or run over them or something
and
like that. And sure as shit, they flipped the script with the Hare Krishnas. And I was like, oh, that's nice. Indeed. That's nice. It was a nice touch, I thought. Yeah, so this movie was a hit, you know. And I think it just, you know, I don't know what was going on in 82. But I think looking at it now, you know, like we said, it's innocent, goofy humor. Like I said, the Italians are super broad. They're like, I'm going to give you an offer you cannot refuse.
Yep.
You know, obviously.
Oh, so, they're all these dad does.
Yeah, these dad does and ama. That's everything they say. There's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing they don't say that isn't that way. So there's all that. There's jive talking in here.
Yes, there is.
So we have that moment.
Oh, yeah. Like, I forgot the fucking jive talk sequence. Yeah,
The jive talk sequence.
Man.
Yeah, that jive talk sequence is something else. And the way they walk, that's the best part. My favorite part is when they start walking. One of my favorite things in the movie is actually when he's kind of establishing himself a little bit as this quote-unquote Bruce Lee kind of character. And he flips the script on a gang of Utes. As Joe Pesci would say from My Cousin Vinny, he flips the script on him by saying that, oh, I can't fight you because your master is blah, blah, blah. And he's like, but that master and this master, they don't like it, so you guys can fight.
Yep.
And then they get into it about whose master is a better master. Because, again, this was the early 80s. You know, martial arts is still a pretty big deal. Everybody was kung fu fighting.
So the ninja movies, right around that time.
As Carl Douglas says, right? Everybody was kung fu fighting. I mean, that's just the way it was.
It's fast as lightning.
And that's just the world we were living in at the time. And that's, you know, that, if anything, is where this movie generates a lot of its humor and its existence is the you know, it's like we said, it's a pop culture film. And mid-70s to maybe early 80s, maybe even mid-80s. It seems like to me, I would say maybe between
mid-80s. Yeah,
I'd say somewhere between 83, 85. Maybe the martial arts train kind of started dropping off a little bit. Mm-hmm. There were still some movies being made, but obviously there's still films being made to this day. But I'm talking about that kind of cult popularity that it had in the States with, you know, things like Kung Fu Theater and stuff like that. You know, where, with kids like us growing up and watching the worst dubbed, chopped up versions of Shaw Brother films and all these things we would watch.
And we did.
Yeah, and we watched them over and over and over again.
Yes, we did.
But yeah, I'm not surprised it was a hit because, again, I think it came out during the height of, maybe not the height, but certainly around that era of the kind of kung fu craze. Again, there's a disco song. There's, you know, Elvis Presley did it before he died.
Songs ever.
You know, there. But this does have, I will say this, it does have some of the worst fight scenes you'll see in a movie. Now, that's part of the comedy here, but don't go into this expecting even somewhat great. But it does have the one thing. I mean, if you wanted to see Margot Hemingway go through lattice work, if that's something you needed
to
check
off. This is the movie for you.
Yeah, if that's something you need to check off your bucket list, then this is one. Yeah. it's the greatest Margot Hemingway falling through lattice work scene in cinema history.
Probably because I would put it up there. It's in the top three.
Yes, probably. Oh, yeah. Anyway, as you could probably see, I was probably trying to get trying to find notes at that point, probably. So I won't get into any more real details about it because the movie's very simple. I mean, it turns into a bit of a road trip film.
Yeah.
I think it probably needed to turn into a road trip film a little earlier.
Well, I think that once it turns into a road trip film, I mean, it kind of gets a little bit more formless. But then again, I mean, the whole movie is kind of predicated on these skits, these mini skits that that Yoon does throughout. So, I mean, it's almost like six of one, half a dozen of the other in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he always making fun of
in
white.
That respect.
When he gets on the road, that's when he starts making fun of white culture as well. So that
sure, yeah.
So again, like I said, that's when this movie is
much more equal opportunity.
Yeah, this movie is. I think on the surface you see it, or maybe if you remember it as a kid, you think to yourself, "Ooh, that wouldn't go over well today," but. Again, and not to get political about it, because I don't think it is political. I think the genius of Yoon here, and I'm not saying this is a masterpiece, but I think the important thing to remember here is he's making fun of all of us.
Sure.
And that we all take ourselves too seriously. Yep. And that is the fun of this movie. The fun of this movie is that he's sitting there saying, look, this is something we do as a culture. This is something you guys do as a culture. This is something America does as a culture in general. You know, these are all these things. Again, except for the really weird boob joke, which feels completely out of place in this movie.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it is. I cannot.
It really. It stands out for being just so like, what?
Yeah, I can't even tell you how shocking that moment is. Not in the fact that you see boobs. That's not the shocking part of it. The shocking part of it is throughout the whole movie, he's not being. He's this gentle.
Yeah,
innocent.
He's not being that mean.
Yeah, and obviously the joke there is that he's still so stupid and innocent that he doesn't realize he's being mean.
Right.
But it still just comes off as mean.
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree with you on that.
It's just a weird moment in a movie that I think mostly for the quality of comedy it has, it mostly lands everything it needs to throw out there. Mm-hmm. And there are some, don't get me wrong, I do think there are some wounded birds here. I do think there's some bad jokes here. But bad in the way that going back in time and seeing these jokes and how bad they can be, there's still some charm to them. It's funny, I was watching some old Saturday Night Live skits, not on purpose. I just kind of came across them on TV the other day. I was really tired and I just wanted to sit down. I just wanted to turn something on. Because I was just wanted to pass out maybe for 30 or 40 minutes. I had a long work week, long days, 12, 14-hour days. And we only worked 4 days, and I was just exhausted. And I just wanted to kick back and relax, and the kids went somewhere with my wife. And I just wanted to kick back and relax for a little bit. And I just turned on TV, and there was some I take that back. I turned on the Peacock channel there, that one I was talking about. And they have these live channels on there. A lot of these streaming services are doing that now. And so I just kind of go on there and click on the Saturday Night Live channel. I'm like, I'll just put that on the background. I'll just lay here for 10, 20, 30 minutes, however long they let me, until they come back home. However long, I'll just lay here. Mm-hmm. And it's the skit where Dan Aykroyd plays the plumber, and he comes, or the repairman, and he comes in, his ass crack's hanging out, and you got Bill Murray picking on Gilda Radner's character, and Bill Murray doing some of the hammiest comedy acting I've ever seen him do, ever. And that's saying something, because when he really wants to ham it up, he can ham it up. And basically, he's doing his kind of groundskeeper character in that thing. But I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. But I am generally laughing at how stupid it is.
Yep.
And it just made me think to myself that that's kind of this movie. This, you know, there's no genius here. But the genius is how goofy and dumb it is. And sometimes that's really good medicine. I think it's really good medicine to sit around and just think, Jesus Christ, this is so stupid. And you just get a chuckle out of it. And, I'm glad we picked it, because it's one of those films that I was nervous about picking, because I just thought it was going to be a turd.
Yeah.
I'll just be frank and honest with you. And I think you were too, because I could tell by the reaction you gave me when I told you I was going to pick it. You were like, oh yeah. Okay. Because you probably thought you hadn't seen it in years, and you probably thought, oh, this is going to be a turd, and it's going to be hard for me to not talk about it without saying it's a turd. But it's just really this kind of easy breezy, laid back, kind of innocent, fun movie.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it really is.
With a really bad disco song in it.
Oh, you bite your tongue, sir. Yeah, no, I completely agree. Is that, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah, kick it over to you.
So, make or break for me, there's so many skits in this thing that I kind of have a hard time singling one out. But I'm going to go with the testimonial in the black church and the jive talk scene after that. Because, you know, that's about as edgy as the film gets, but it's still really good natured. MVT, I'm going to go with Yoon. He could be a little bit try hard here and there. And a lot of what he does here feels like he's, you know, telling jokes, you know, in that Henny Youngman way that we referred to at the beginning. But it works for me. And he's certainly a charming enough guy. And my score, I'm going to go 7 out of 10 on this.
Nice.
Because, yeah, no, it is a lot of fun, and I had a lot of fun with it. And I would totally rewatch this again at this point in my life or later, and be perfectly happy with what it does for me. So
nice.
There you go.
That's good. I'm surprised by that score. So my make or break, I'm going to go with the I like the scene in the alley with the turning the students against each other.
Yeah. Okay. Course, yeah. Yeah.
I think
yeah.
at that point you might get a butterfly knife, if I'm not mistaken.
yeah, I do believe you do.
Which, you know, again, was a staple. Hare Krishnas and butterfly knives. It's a miracle we've grown up and been any kind of normal. When you think about it.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. But I really like that scene. It's a great example too of the kind of Yoon sense of humor.
Yes.
And that a lot of his humor is kind of just wordplay. And because, yep. I think I talked about it off the air, but you know, his ex-girlfriend called him a sex object. She offered sex and I object or something like that. Or I offered sex and she objected or something like that. I mean, it is Henny Youngman, but Johnny Yoon. Yeah. He's just kind of delivering, and Johnny Yoon didn't have a huge career. I mean, he did this and the sequel, obviously. He just died a year ago.
Yeah, yeah, just very, very recently. Yeah,
yeah, and but he was in a few other things. It's weird. I didn't know he was in the Cannonball Run, the TV's talk show host. How about that? I'd have to go back and look at that to see that. But yeah, but I think he was friendly with folks in Hollywood, like Richard Pryor and people like that, and you know, a comedian, right? So
yeah,
and, you know, he just had this kind of I don't know what the word is. Kind of a happy go lucky next year. So he's my MVT of the whole thing. I like him. I like what he brings to the movie. When he smiles, I smile. So I guess that's one of the best ways to put it.
Yeah.
My score is the same as yours, man. 7 out of 10. I could go. Nice. I could be right in the same ballpark as Clones with 6.75. But this movie just kind of made me feel good, and that's a nice feeling every now and then. You know, I tend to watch a lot of transgressive stuff and everything else, and that stuff makes me feel good too, but it's because it makes my brain start working. Sometimes it's nice to turn the old noodle off, to use a colloquialism that's popular in this movie, because he's really good at making noodles.
Yes, he is, with his special, what you call it?
Flour.
Flour.
Yes, a special flour. But yeah, that's our thoughts on They Call Me Bruce. Like I said, it almost makes me want to run out and see They Still Call Me Bruce, but I'm going to hold off for a while.
Yeah, no, you got to pace yourself on these things.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
All right, that's the big show. We pretty much know what we're doing next week, correct? Yeah, we do.
Yes, we do.
Go ahead and tell the good folks at home or wherever they're listening to this generally great podcast. I'm using my seductive voice. I'm using my seductive voice on you right now.
Turn it up, buddy. Turn it up.
Yeah. Tell them what you're picking, Todd.
Ooh, thanks. I'm picking. I am picking a movie called Paprika from 2006, directed by Satoshi Kon. So I'm getting another anime on there and another Satoshi Kon movie on there, because I've just been kind of itching to get it in. And number one and number two, it was next on my unwatched Blu-rays pile. Yeah. So I was like, you know what, fuck it, we're doing this one.
That is probably a
huge motivation for so much of what happens on this show.
God, it's not even close to funny. That is that is a huge generator of content that is picked for the show.
Indeed it is. And yet again, Here we go. So yeah, that is my pick. I'm really looking forward to your thoughts on it.
Yeah, nice. I was on the Not a Bomb podcast, and they asked me to pick my favorite movie in a genre that I don't typically love, and I don't love anime. That's not a genre I love.
Right. Well, that's the other thing is that, you know, we don't really do a whole lot of it. No. Because I know that you and Will are not really not as prone to it as I am.
Yes. But I'm very open-minded, as you know, and sure. I've never seen Paprika, so I'm looking forward to watching it.
Cool.
I picked something totally different. I've been wanting to talk about this movie for a while, just because, again, it's another one of those kind of pop culture moments that we probably both remember growing up, and that's The Legend of the Lone Ranger, mm-hmm. And this is the early 80s version.
Yes, it's 81.
Yes, 81. So they tried to reboot the Lone Ranger character with Clinton Spilsbury as the lead. Yes, you guys don't know who we're talking about because
there's reasons for that.
Yeah, they've picked an unknown, and they were trying to do something here, and it bombed out hard. And but I saw it in the theater, and I'm one of the
did
few
you
people.
Really?
Yeah, I'm one of the few people I know. Me and my brother both did. I'm one of the few. We're two of the few people you know who will tell you that we saw it in the theater. And me, and him, and my mom and dad were the only people in the theater. It was the first film I can remember seeing as a kid where I thought to myself, I thought everybody went to the movies.
Right.
But that was the first time I had that moment where I was like, wow, nobody wants to see this movie. So it's an interesting conversation, but yeah, we'll talk about it. And the Lone Rangers had it's obviously not had a good, film history. It's strange. You would think, you know, masked man, superhero, basically, Western, you would think that America would somehow be able to get that right. But film wise, theatrical film wise, it doesn't seem like we've ever been able to get it right. So I think there's only like two or three, but still, they spent a lot of money on the last one. They still couldn't get it right. So
yeah,
no, I like parts of it. I it looked great. I'll give it that. That's about all I'll give it though. Oh, I had a hard time.
I am gonna let you give it that.
Yeah, it was rough. I will not be revisiting that for the show next week. No, if I never see that version of the Lone Ranger again, I'll be perfectly happy.
Oh yeah.
But this one I have not seen in many a year. So, I'd be curious. I'm going to be curious to watch it. So it could be a total bomb. It could be a total duck. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen it in so long, to be honest with you. I can barely remember the movie, but I remember everything around it, if that makes sense. And it was one of the first times too where I remember the kind of selling of a movie as much as the movie itself, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It does.
The marketing. I can remember the marketing. It wasn't like on Happy Meals or anything like that. We hadn't gotten to that point yet, but it was, I can remember everywhere I looked, there was like posters and every time we went to the movies and stuff, I'd see these posters, and obviously anybody in a mask as a kid growing up loving superheroes and comic books, yeah. I was drawn to. Yeah. And I don't know how you felt about the Lone Ranger character itself anyway, but like the TV show, I liked the TV show growing up. My grandfather.
Loved the Clayton Moore?
Yeah.
Clayton Moore?
Yeah, Clayton Moore. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great show.
Yeah.
So that's what we'll be doing next week, The Lone Ranger and Paprika. So it should be fun.
How about it?
Two very different subjects.
That is about as chocolate and peanut butter as it gets.
Yes, definitely. More like chocolate and, I don't know.
Skamuts.
Yeah, chocolate and sardines. More. All right, we hope everybody is having a good time out there. Stay safe, and we will see you next week. I will say adios.
Adios.
Thanks for listening. You can find the gentleman at ggtmc.com, and you can email the gentleman at midnightcinema@gmail.com.